The interview is a sales process. Most people don't realize how intense it can be. What do you want to achieve? What's most important to you?
Do you want to be the absolute best candidate for a job you'll love in a career with balance? Veteran leadership career catalyst Jonathan Flax is teaming up with leading executive search professionals to provide you with cutting-edge career transition strategies. Welcome to Career Transition Experts. And now, here's your host, Jonathan Flax.
Welcome to the program. I'm very pleased to introduce my friend Ernie Bavona, who is a chairman of Starboard Consultants, and for 40 years, bringing an expertise of recruiting to the raw chemicals. That's kind of like this, the fragrance and flavors industry. And he's also someone I've seen on a regular basis Wednesday nights out of City Island on the Big Tom Sailboat Racing Series. That's how we came to know each other. So, Ernie, welcome to the Career Transition Experts.
Welcome. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So I'm going to start off with seeing what we might discover by having the conversation framed in the metaphors, right? What is it? You showed me a picture right behind you of taking the lead in a sailboat race. What does it take to win in sailboat racing, yacht racing, that could be applied to winning in the game of landing a job of your dreams at an executive level?
I knew you were going to ask me this question somewhere in the framework of our discussion. And this morning, Nicole and I were talking about how there are things about sailboats, racing, and other activities that are applicable within the marketplace. And a lot of it, in terms of sailboat racing, most people don't realize how intense it can be and how much you have to be aware of the surroundings and you have to stay focused. So in job hunting, a lot of it is, what is your place? Where do you fit in the marketplace? And where do you fit the applicability that you skills, attitude, capability that you bring to the marketplace? And then how do you advantage that? How do you make that to your advantage? And it's not unlike sailboat racing, but it's focus. It's being aware of your surroundings, staying true. You can't give up no matter what, because there are sometimes races where the wind dies and you're stuck. And there are other times when you're ahead and the wind dies behind you and you're watching, or rather your wind dies and people are catching you. But if you stay focused, you should win. And if you don't, you got to get up, do it again. Same thing with business. You can't lose. You can't lose focus on the fact that you'll win some and have confidence. You'll win someday and you'll have confidence.
Yeah. If you don't quit, you can't lose. You can.
Right.
Yeah.
If you quit, you lose automatically.
Right.
You're done.
If you don't quit, you can't fail. You can only quit. You know? If you keep trying, you'll get there.
Correct.
Very good. I notice we make a lot of adjustments, and we see our main competitor from the boat I race on, Sanguine.
I'll show you. This is the boat I race on is in that lead position there. And our greater nemesis is this Thin Man, and we see them constantly making adjustments. Little adjustments here, little adjustments there. What's your view on, people often ask me when they're working on resumes, can I make changes? Can I make multiple versions? What are some of the nuances and adjustments that you see people make when you prepare them for interviews that tend to make a difference?
I think the first thing we try to get them to do, especially management candidates, is to get them to put themselves in a position where they're on the other side of the desk. And we review, and I say to them, look, I'm going to go over basics. I want to make sure I've done my job in explaining what you need to do. Candidates, especially management candidates, don't always realize they're the interviewee. They can't be in charge. They have to recognize that they're on the other side. They have to get their heads out of being the manager and get their heads into being the candidate. That's not always easy for people who are used to in management for many years. The second thing is, and this goes for anybody, no matter what position they're in or they're going for, I don't care whether it's scientists, flavorists, perfumers, regulatory, salespeople, that the interview is a sales process. And if you think about it as a sales process and your experience in sales, you'll get it. you'll know what I'm talking about. But if you're not in sales, you won't necessarily know what I'm talking about. So I have to go through how that works and what their part is to play in the process. And then get it. And then they can understand better how they have to fit their skills, their capabilities, their desires to what the employer needs. And sometimes this morning, we were debriefing a candidate and she wasn't sure whether the client knew what he wanted. So we called the client and said, hey, we're briefing candidates to have them show you what you, or ask you, what do you want over the first 6, 12, 18 months? And if you don't know, it's going to be trouble. So it works.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. We're seeing a lot of researchers and high tech candidates these days. What are some things that you've said or ways in which you've coached non-salespeople? Like when you just said a moment ago, non-salespeople don't necessarily know what I'm talking about. What are some of the most interesting tips and adjustments you've helped non-salespeople make so that they can sell themselves?
I think as a recruiter, you need to understand where they are. They don't have a clue as to what you're talking about. They really don't. And some salespeople don't either. Not all salespeople are good salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
So it's review. Here are the steps we have to go through. Then run through a trial. And then you have to explain to them what you mean by qualifying the job. Sales, you're qualifying the need. And then you have to explain to them how you have to take your skills using various mini stories to answer the concerns of the employer. So one of the first things you have to do in the interview is ask the client, the employer, what do you want to achieve? What's most important to you? Qualify, prioritize, and then bring to bear what you've done through examples of how that's in your quiver of arrows that you can use.
Yeah.
Then you have to ask, how do you feel about that? How do you see me answering those needs? Which is kind of the trial close. And
got
then
it.
You have to go, and if you go slowly enough and you get them to agree with you, and then you practice at least one or two questions, it should work. And if it doesn't, and we were talking earlier, Nicole and I, about a candidate who was in sales, I spent 2 hours constantly going over the two questions the client sent me, and he still didn't get it. And he bombed me. So will it work all the time? No. But I want to know that I've done my best to get the candidate prepared. And that's one of the things I think candidates see in what we do. We are most interested in them performing at their best. And I think that's important. It makes us a little different. We're not out there for the dollar.
Yeah, I saw that in your literature. You're not just a check the box kind of company. And I can see that in you as you round up people that participate in the yacht races and at the City Island Yacht Club. And so your leadership and your interest in caring for people and including people and rallying people is evident to me. So I just want to underscore, if I heard this right, that in an interview, the first step is to qualify, to ask the client what's important to them. It's such a basic concept. What's important to you? That question is not asked. What do you care about? What are you looking to accomplish? And that conversation, like you said, if it's done slowly enough, the client will understand how that manager is listening, or that scientist, or whoever the candidate is. Then to relate with stories. Not just say, oh, I can do that, or give opinions about one's skills, but examples and stories from the past, from your quiver of experiences to exemplify the promise for the future. And then a check-in. Did that answer your question? How did that satisfy? What else do you need to know about it to bring it all the way full circle? That's a great model, Ernie. I like that. Next question. What's the biggest mistake you see smart people making? You're dealing with managers and executives and salespeople and scientists, very intelligent people. What's the example of the silliest or stupidest thing you've seen a smart person do?
We were talking about that this morning because I had gone through some scenarios and Nicole kept saying, no. What about the time that this flavorist, now for many people, they don't know what they are, but it's a highly skilled person. It takes 10 years for you to be apprenticing to become a certified flavorist. I'm looking for a flavorist. There's a very small number of people in the country that do this.
Flavorist.
Yes.
Interesting.
Search on.
Yeah, flavorist.
But she said, can you, I presented the job to her and she asked me if I can introduce her, but don't tell the client who she is. Well, it turns out he knew who this was after a brief description and somebody had already presented her. And I was really, and she came back to me multiple times asking if I can get her into the interview process and not even revealing that she had been presented before by the other recruiter he was using. And that's another long story about how horrible he was in terms of misreading the marketplace. Not as a person. We get along, but he was misreading the marketplace. But here's the intelligent person trying to pull an end run or do whatever. And it was ridiculous because one of the things that a candidate should do, and go back to your question, they need to be transparent. They need to be honest. And most of them have a very high regard about what they are. And sometimes that is a little too high. They misread themselves because they're seeing only themselves. They don't see themselves within the greater context of the marketplace. We see the person as against other people who are also successful. And it's hard for that person to say, I'm the best, if they only know themselves. And we have to help them identify what makes them better than others, how to make that be valuable in the market, in the interview. Recognize that you have to be, you know, not humble, but humble enough or understanding enough that you continue to learn, you're willing to learn, willing to grow. And that's what the client is looking for. He's not looking for the world's expert. Because there's always somebody better, no matter what happens. There's always somebody better. And if you're so egotistical that you are the best, then what does that say about your ability to grow? What does that say about your ability to work with others in the market, in the company? Play nice with others, no matter what. That's all part of that culture.
Yeah, there is a humble way to say, by the grace of God and or having put in many, many years, I built a fair amount, a significant amount of subject matter expertise, and I'd love to share it with you, but I'm certain there's more for me to learn. That kind of statement could really both present strength, but also openness and humility and a connection. That's interesting. What are you seeing in terms of the hiring, the job market? Here it is sort of semi-past COVID. We're maybe hearing there's going to be a recession and layoffs. What are you hearing in the flavors and fragrances markets that's unique to that market and what hiring managers are looking for and have been looking for lately? And what do you think might also be not just only distinct in that market, but also universal?
We not only do flavors and fragrances, but we do ingredients. And they're all part of that flavors and fragrances for food, personal care, and supplements. And that carries a broad swath of the marketplace.
Got it, yeah.
In answer to your question, everybody has to eat. Everybody wants to look nice, the personal care. And sometimes in bad markets, that's a high growth area because people are discouraged. They're down. They want to look their best. So there's growth there. The second, another point is that there's a significant amount of innovation in the food industry because you'll see turnover on the grocery shelves. So there are new flavors and the flavor of the month. And I was talking to a candidate just recently who's involved with, I won't say it, but one of the big meat substitute companies.
Okay.
They're sucking air and they're seeing less of a demand for their products because people are almost going through a fad. Oh, I'm going to eat plant-based food. And it's really not that attractive. And if you know more about the science, it's not even all that good for you. So there's a demand all the time, mostly because people have to eat. they're looking for special people. So we're in an interesting market that doesn't always apply to the greater marketplace, because try going without food for a couple of days, see how you feel. But it's where the market cut back is they would build up inventory. They would reduce the amount of salespeople because they were no longer traveling. So that changed a lot. So instead of having lots of people cover the market, they have fewer people. The need for science and innovation still is very high. And there's still a demand for new, whatever that was, whatever. Always looking for the new product, the new flavor, you know, this, that, low carb, low sugar, whatever. So there's innovation in the ingredients place to substitute whatever it is that people think are bad. And lots of times people aren't really all that knowledgeable. But it's a faddish type of thing. You know, I don't want GMO. I don't want, if you took GMO out of the market, the French cheese industry would collapse. Just like that. Because they use GMO to start the cultures, just as an example.
Right.
People don't understand that.
Interesting. Interesting. I have a few more questions, but is there anything else in general or in specific that you think our executive and management level leaders would be interested to hear about traversing the career transition process, working with recruiters, working with hiring managers? You have one more pearl of wisdom?
Yeah, I think, and this is interesting because I hadn't thought about it until we were reviewing today. And, you know, we get, first of all, we're mostly into recruiting. We're not always seeking job orders. So I'm a little bit of an oddball because companies call us because I've been around for a long time. But one of the things an executive can do, and they know that they're in a tough space because the pyramid is, you know, there, is if they find something that they want to pursue, it may not be a bad idea to talk to the recruiter and say, hey, Ernie, I know there's something going on at ABC company. Can you do anything about that? And sometimes we can, and sometimes we can't. And if I can't, because they won't accept our fee, we'll deal with more of the smaller companies, not the multi-billion dollar ones. Because we do charge a little bit more than a lot of other recruiters. So if that executive wants to hint at or tell us flat out, hey, can you get me over at XYZ? We're a partner in that process, and we're going to make sure that we can do our best. We're not going to snake him because he's the one that brought the opportunity to us. So I think, and that's, and they may have their ear to the ground more intensely than we are. They're trying to find a job. We're looking for somebody else. We're looking for. So I recommend that if you can do that and work with a recruiter that you trust to help you, that trust is important, and be transparent. That's important. And we're honest. You know, if I can't do it, I'll tell them. What am I going to lose by saying can't do it? And my honesty will, you know, I'll see him at a trade show later on and we'll talk. So you want to build up that longevity of trust over decades because it comes back.
And it's trust is built more, not just on being honest, like answering a question honestly, but being upfront, not withholding any information, being proactive and forward thinking when you hear of an opportunity. And so candidates who want to be proactive and stimulate a recruiter to maybe partner up to get in the door, that recruiter is really going to appreciate your taking initiative.
Yeah. And frankly, look, if that helps both parties, we both win years later. It comes back to help both of us.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to lose because if I can't do it, I'll tell him.
Got that.
Find it himself. And the recruiter doesn't have value. I don't know, talk to others, but recruiters can add a lot of value to the process.
Yeah.
A good recruiter has a lot to offer. Coaching that candidate, coaching the company. Coaching the company on what they should be doing. You'd be surprised how less cognizant the company is in what they should be looking for. And we can spend a lot of time talking to that company about adjusting their sites and why they should be looking at this versus that. Often the job order is this multi-page thing when it really can be condensed into two or three sentences.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. Fascinating. Last two questions. Do you have a favorite singer, performer, band, composer? I like to ask all my clients that musical question.
I'm very eclectic. I like classical music when I'm in the mood for having to settle down.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going into a stressful environment, I'll put that music on. But I tend to like the late 50s, 60s, 70s. There are certain groups that I enjoy listening to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the folk, because I'm a little bit older than you. So I remember going to concerts in college to some of the, you know, Peter Paul Mary, that kind of stuff. But we went to a Broadway show, The Jersey Boys. Love that. Love the Four Seasons.
Yeah.
The Elvis in the Office, we listened to, you know, Elton John, I don't care. I mean, it's, you know, it's that group. I'm not into the heavy metal, loud music.
I'm trying to remember. We were watching a movie last week, and there was a scene with, like, the club manager. It was Diane Keaton. And Diane Keaton and I forgot who the leading man was. All About That was the name of the film, something like that. All About That. Anyway, Frankie Valli was the club manager. He was a little acting part.
Right.
That was exciting. And do you have any causes? Is there any philanthropy or nonprofit organization that's on a cause that you believe in? Support.
Yeah, I mean, aside from all the local police and fire, first aid, all that kind of stuff, the colleges, we do support the Coast Guard Foundation, the Army Emergency Relief Fund, because I was retired military, or I am retired military, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. My brother is on the national board. One of my brothers is on the national board. And that's a group that is maybe not all that familiar, but they are involved with helping people who have been abused, helping people who have been trafficked. It's a worthwhile organization. They partner with the FBI, local law enforcement, to rescue kids, and very much involved with the cross-border issues right now with crises and people who are abused. Become abusers.
Mm.
Horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Mm. Got it. But you have a lot of interest, and I'm moved by that. Well, thank you very much, Ernie Bavona, Starboard Consultants, for being with us today. And I look forward to seeing you soon. I'll probably see you on the course at the Gear Buster in October. And thanks again for your pearls of wisdom.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. I've enjoyed it. I hope this was worthwhile.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening to the Career Transition Experts. We hope you got something of value and would love to hear from you on what you did learn and how this episode made a difference. If you'd like to contact or reach our guests, take a look at the show notes, and you can also find there a link where we will send you a free copy of our resume preparation checklist. If there's anything we can do to help you fulfill your vision and make that transition smoothly, contact us. We are here for you. Thanks again for listening. Hope to see you again soon. Bye for now.